Good morning. Welcome to the Mr. Elvin podcast. It's Monday, November 7th, the morning after the Commanders' 2017 home loss to the Vikings. Here to talk about that is the Kirk Cousins to my Taylor Heinicke, Matt Terrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. I like this one because, like, we're both erratic. We're both not quite what you want, but, you know, we're good enough.
I didn't think we were going to do this today because I kind of liked falling into the rhythm of only doing a podcast after a Commanders victory. Kind of like how Heinicke only buys himself a pair of Jordans after each victory. But this was a fun game. I actually enjoyed watching this game. There's some meat on the bone for us to chew on. And then there's also the Snyder news from last week with the potential sale of the team. So, where do you want to start?
I mean, we can start with this. I'm interested that you thought this was a fun game with meat on the bone. I don't know that I came away with the same read. Let's talk about the touchdown throw to Samuel, right? Which was amazing. A thrilling play to watch. Entirely fun. Would have liked it even if it wasn't the team I was rooting for, as long as it wasn't the team I was playing against. It also was fluky as all hell. And I don't know. I just didn't come away from this game thinking that there was any point where they were going to win because they were better. I thought there were points where they might win if they could hold on, but it was just, it just felt like the offense is just an abject disaster.
Yeah. I mean, it was a close game and, you know, it was like close and competitive, and you had the Heinicke factor, which is always fun. You had Cousins returning. The defense was playing really well.
Yes.
And you know, going up 17-7 in the fourth, fluke or not, with the entire stadium chanting Heinicke's name, or at least half the stadium chanting Heinicke's name. That was fun, you know? And I never thought that the Bears were better. And in hindsight, I don't think, you know, if they play the Vikings 10 times, they win more than like 3 or 4. But yeah, it was about all you could ask for from a November Washington Commanders game.
I mean, that's damning with pretty faint praise, isn't it? Like, it's, I guess what I just keep coming down on is, I'm just really down on Scott Turner. I do not think he's good. And it's making the games less fun for me to watch because I just, the offense just seems hapless, and I don't blame the players, and it's wasting what is at this point genuinely a pretty good effort from the defense.
Yeah. The defense was really strong. I felt like yesterday was the most agitated I've been, or that I've kind of seen other people be about Scott Turner. Like, I just happened to be, I don't know, or maybe I was just on Twitter more yesterday than I am during most games.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, there's just a lot of shitting on Scott Turner, and some of it very deserved. My favorite play call, which I didn't see a lot of mudslinging about, was, I think it was 3rd and 9 from about midfield, and they did a design run for Heinicke up the middle. They got stuffed for like 2 yards. Like, yeah, who does a design run to their, like, not Michael Vick quarterback on 3rd and 9?
Who knows? I mean, Scott Turner does. He's just nothing he calls. I think I said this last week. Nothing he calls makes sense with what he called before, nor does it appear to be setting up what he's going to call later. Does he occasionally, you know, craft an interesting play or call an interesting play? Like, sure. But I don't get the sense that he has any idea what individual players are good at or not, or at least he doesn't call plays as if he does. And there's just no overall sense of structure to his game. It's very frustrating. I wanted to like him. I came into the season hoping he, you know, you always want to find somebody interesting and have it be exciting, but he's just, if they turned around and fired him today, I would A, not, you know, be able to argue with it, and B, I'd be like, well, how much worse can it get? And then it would get worse.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's getting fired, but I mean, during this run where they've gone, what, 3-1 over the last four, I think they've averaged 17 points, including 17 yesterday. But it was Turner. The offensive line is choppy at best. I feel like there is a consistent rush on Heinicke and not a lot of room for Robinson and Gibson to run. This is kind of a consistent theme through the weeks. And then Heinicke himself is so limited. I think it's hilarious. Well, first of all, like the interception in the fourth quarter, which is a terrible interception. You know, you're up 10 and you've got an open receiver over the middle, and you do the one thing you can't do, like float it over his head into the arms of the safety. Terrible interception, but that's part of it. Like, that's part of the attraction. That's part of the ride with Heinicke. You almost expect at least once a game there's going to be a play like that. Which just brings me back to a few days ago. Did you read Thomas Boswell's Heinicke column?
No, I was confused. Did he explain in the column why he has, you know, come down from the mountain for one last job, and that one last job is to write about Taylor Heinicke? Because I was confused, but not confused enough to click on it.
No, I mean, I think he occasionally will drop a column. I don't know when his last one was, but I feel like I've seen like two or three since his retirement. This one was so bizarre. It was, I mean, I really enjoyed it though. Like, I love Boswell, so he could write anything and I'd enjoy it. But it was like in praise of Heinicke and basically posing it as, we don't know what he is yet. And like, if he were a quarterback with more pedigree, even if he were just like a third or fourth round draft pick like Kirk Cousins, everyone would be giving him a chance as the franchise quarterback, and he could certainly improve from here. And he had all sorts of stats, like his QB win-loss record is basically 500, which is comparable to lots of good quarterbacks, especially at the start of their career. His QB rating is like 84 or something, which Boswell posed as like league average. I don't know. I feel like if your QB is posting an 84, you're not happy about that, no matter who it is. But yeah, it was an interesting because like, of course, we've litigated this. I think we're in agreement that Heinicke's basically a perfect backup quarterback.
Yeah.
And like, if he has to play for a stretch like he is right now, like, you're in luck that you have him as your backup. But if he's your starter, you're screwed. This whole column was basically like, maybe he should be the starter.
I am dumbfounded that Boswell thought this was worth doing a column on. I mean, I'd be intrigued to see Heinicke with a different offensive coordinator. Like, what would Andy Reid do with Taylor Heinicke? You know, let's say we say he's a perfect backup. Would he be a perfect backup for Mahomes? Like, he doesn't have the arm strength, but he's sort of like 60% of Mahomes across the board. You know, he's like got a similar mindset, a similar, you know, weird escapability skill set. He's just not as good at anything. So like, if you drop him into that offense for a half or a quarter, does he look better than he does here? Or does he look the best he can here because for some inexplicable reason, Scott Turner is like his champion?
I don't think that he is the best he could be in this offense. If you put him into, say, like a KC offense, I would think he'd be like what he is here, but plus, you know, 10%, plus 20%, something like that. But yeah, I mean, to imagine him or to advocate for him as like the franchise quarterback is to just be completely fine settling for like the bottom third of the league.
That said, when I look, I mean, I'm just going to keep harping on Scott Turner, because when you look at the play of Wentz this year, which was mostly bad, and the play of Heinicke this year, which has been up and down, both of them had, streaky good points, and all of the wins I feel like came off of this, like, you know, I think we were saying Wentz was only playing one good half each game he played, and it was just sort of a question of what sequence things came in. But I feel like if you look back over all of the games this year, there's no point where you feel like the Commanders are in control of the game, you know, consistently. You know, there might be a quarter like that, whatever it was, the third quarter in the first game, whatever the quarter was, where Wentz got hot in the opener.
Right. You know? They had four touchdowns in the second half. Yeah.
Right. But like, there's just the whole offense feels fundamentally flawed to me in a way that I don't think anyone can overcome. Literally, I aside from the fact that Tom Brady would just stop listening to Scott Turner and would take over the offense himself. So, okay, fine. In that situation, he could make it work. But anything short of that, anybody actually trying to follow what Turner's doing, I think would not have success. I just think it's that simple.
Well, I mean, we focused a lot on the quarterbacks as well. And it's been below average, I guess. You'd say blended quarterback play this year would be below league average.
Yes.
But it's kind of hidden that like the running backs as well, and I think in part because it's like a two-headed rushing attack, both Gibson and Robinson with a pretty high amount of volume. Let's see. Gibson has 89 carries. Robinson has 67, but only over five games. They're both averaging easily less than 4 yards a rush. Like, so there's there's a below average passing attack, but a significantly below average run game as well to go along with it.
Yeah, it's almost as if the people organizing the game plan have no idea how to pass to set up the run or vice versa and just kind of call plays willy-nilly like I do with Madden. Like, it really looks like the way I play Madden.
There was a moment yesterday where one of the announcers was like, this is a 200 rushing attack, much like D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart in Carolina. Pretty sure those dudes average like 5 yards a carry. I'm not even kidding. I think they were like 5+ yards per carry. It was like a two-headed attack. Here in Washington, it's unsuccessful. It's not much of an attack.
With the whole thing, I mean, and the offensive line also, I agree, does not look good. But again, I don't know that he's playing to their strengths. I don't know that he has any idea what their strengths are, or possibly even who they are. He might not have any more idea than I do of who starts on the offensive line from week to week.
Related to that is how many pass deflections were there yesterday?
A lot.
It felt like a lot. Let's see. Okay, here we go. I see passes defensed, passes deflected. I don't know, but I'm looking at the box score. Holy shit. 3, 5, 6, 7. I don't know all of these dudes' names, but I think most of those seven were linemen or linebackers at the line.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like there was probably 5 times at least, like a notable amount of times where the ball was just getting batted right back at Heineke's face.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Which is part Heineke, but part play calling. Like, I don't really know how to decouple it.
I don't know how to decouple it either. And on that one, I put a lot on play calling, not putting Heineke in a position to throw. But then ultimately, that is definitely on Heineke to just – it feels like I have – actually, sitting right next to me right now, I have a very small, stupid dog. And when we are walking this small, stupid dog, and he sees any other dog, regardless of size, he loses his mind and just starts barking and lunging at them. And he's an idiot. And that's Taylor Heineke. Like, Taylor Heineke just has no idea what size he is. He has no clue what he's shaped like. He doesn't know anything. And that's his greatest strength. And it's also his greatest weakness, because he thinks he's 6'4" and can just sling that ball over the line. And neither of those things is true. So I don't know. But again, Scott Turner needs to realize that and then put him in a position where his opportunity to make those dumb mistakes is minimized, which he doesn't do. I don't know. I think we are in that place where the team is going to scramble to try to get the last wild card spot. And I would never advocate tanking, but just like put the rookie in, see what happens. You know what I mean?
Like
if the rookie is better than we expect, and you know, you are competitive and maybe competing for that last playoff spot, great. That's worth it.
But like, you want the rookie in now?
Yeah. Why not?
Well, I'll tell you why not, because Heineke's fun and he's played well enough to win. Like, every game that he's played, they've been, you know, right. I mean, every game this season has been more or less a coin flip or like a 3-point game, other than the Eagles and the Cowboys. And I would just ride with Heineke because he's fun. And at some point, he's either going to stop being fun or he's going to get hurt and then go to Howell.
I kind of think that they're going to get killed by the Eagles next week, and then they're going to try to turn back to Wentz, because that aligns with Wentz coming off IR.
And I really don't want to see Wentz play another snap.
No, me either. Ever again.
This feels so much like the McNabb situation from several years ago. I mean, a little different flavors to it, but you know, McNabb coming to be, I don't know, felt like Snyder's pick to be like the new franchise quarterback.
Yep.
Washed up, former Philly, high, you know, cap hit, whatever. Didn't like it. The defense did play really well.
They did.
Like, no, Allen and Payne, I feel like, were in the backfield all game. I mean, whether it's pass rush, run stuffing, like, it just seemed like they were the two most dominant players on the field.
Yes, I agree with that. And I genuinely wish there was a way that they could keep everybody together for another year to get to see them, you know, hopefully with a healthy Chase Young for a whole year. I would really like to see what they could be, because they're fun when they're playing well. There's, you know, I didn't really expect it, but they've been fun. I don't know.
Also, Benjamin St. Juste sighting yesterday.
A few of them. He looked pretty good.
Well, the play that turned into an interception, I think he was covering Jefferson and it got deflected to Johnson for the pick in the end zone. there was that. I mean, he was, you know, it was excellent defense. I don't know how he didn't interfere. He kind of had his back to the quarterback and he resisted the urge to interfere and made a great play. And then later he had, I think it was a pick six, but it got called for the DPI. And yeah, I guess it was, but it was also like watching on slow-mo replay, even though he got called for the penalty, it like made me think he's a better quarterback after that play than before it. Like it was a really competitive going head-to-head against maybe the best receiver in the NFL, and he was holding his own.
I was pleased with him. I'm pleased with the whole defense. And it's almost the exact opposite of what we're saying with Turner, is that Del Rio, for his many, many, many flaws, seems to at least understand who his players are and what they are good at and what they can do. And he's getting them in a position to succeed, which I did not expect, to be honest. That's not how I thought of him this 6 months ago. But
should we call his defense the Red Wave?
Or I mean,
should we
wait until
Tuesday? Should we see what happens?
I think it's funny no matter when you do it. I say go for it.
I have a question.
Hit me.
That's totally random. So are you familiar with the Commanders song, Left Hand Up, Who Are We, the Commanders?
I'm familiar with its existence, but I will admit to you that I have not, shall we say, actually read it or anything or listened to it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's like a kind of a long, like, fan-made video. And anyways, I had heard it a number of times just seeing it on the internet, and I've seen people kind of joke around with it, like, oh, these OGs are awesome, whatever, Left Hand Up, kind of joking. I played it for miles yesterday during the game at one point, probably when they were up 17-7. And ever since, he and I both can't stop saying, Left Hand Up, Who Are We, the Commanders.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a hit then.
It's great.
They've nailed it. Yeah. I don't know what to make of the Commanders thing. So let's turn at that point, because it ties into me with the Snyder conversation. For the moment, let's take it as read that he is actually selling. Let's believe that. Let's choose to let ourselves believe that for a minute.
I don't. Okay,
fine. Me neither, but whatever. Let's assume he sells. Do you want the new owner to change the name?
Oh man, not really. Like, I don't feel that strongly, negatively about the name. I just feel it's more like, you know, it's a name. And that's also kind of how I feel about like every other name that was mentioned post football team. So no, I'd rather just stick with those.
You just want to try to make fetch happen with the Commanders.
I guess. I don't know. Do you have like some alternative tact in mind?
I don't know. I don't, but I do feel like there's part of me that would just, if this were to actually happen, I would love for someone to just cut ties with the entire Snyder era.
I guess I should say I would not mind if they changed the name, but that's not really like, that's not something I thought about at all as part of this.
I mean,
it wasn't part of my wish list. It wasn't my wish list.
Well, but you don't believe that it's actually going to happen.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it feels a little too good to be true. Yeah, just that. But then also, like Mitch Tischler on the whatever you call it talk pod, has been going on about like this is just a leverage play to drive up the value of the franchise and bring on a minority owner that would infuse the franchise with more cash and help them build the stadium and enable Snyder to maintain control. And you know what? That sounds really logical.
Certainly does.
Yeah. Like I mean, if I was betting, I would bet that they're going to sell the team, but I am not counting on that.
I don't think, the reason I don't think it's going to happen is because my fundamental belief with Snyder is that everything he does goes wrong. That's like everything he does fails without exception. That's my like starting precept for him. And this would fall into that category. Like, I think that he maybe that's what he was trying to do, but I don't think he's capable of doing that. I think he's genuinely too stupid. And if that was what he was trying to do, suddenly he's reached the point where, like, if he tries to turn down a $6.5-7 billion offer for this franchise, the other owners are going to justifiably murder him. I just don't see. I don't see any way around that. So now he's put himself in a position where I don't think he can keep the team, even if he wants to.
Good. I've heard among the list of potential buyers, it's been Jeff Bezos, probably most prominently, and then Jay-Z and also Kevin Durant. Have you heard all those names?
I had not heard Kevin Durant aside from as like wild ass speculation.
We throw Matthew McConaughey in there, maybe Dale Earnhardt Jr.?
But sure, why not? I mean, I do think that there's a version whereby they all those people band together and form sort of an Avengers of new team owners, and that we get all of them at once.
Those are, well, I don't know if they're all likable people, but they're all at least like interesting figures that are not like completely detestable, like Dan Snyder.
Right. Well, so my assumption then is that Elon Musk is going to buy the team. That's pretty much where I'm landing on this.
You know what I was disappointed by? I mean, all of this is wonderful. This aspect of the news, like Snyder selling the team. I heard people say this is like the best news. This is the best thing to happen to the franchise since they won the Super Bowl and whatever that was, January 92. I think it's second best. I think changing the name, like us not having to root for the Redskins anymore. That's number one for me still. Number two would be this.
It's funny because I was not metaphorically, but very literally cleaning out my closet yesterday and found the shelf where I have all of my Redskins gear, all of which, you know, and I have a ton of it from when my time with the team, when I would just get stuff from the equipment room for free. And I was like, I can't wear, not only can't I wear any of this, I don't know if I can viably like sell it and feel good about myself.
You have to create, you know what I mean? Like a burner account.
Yeah, eBay. Seriously. And actually, is eBay letting you sell it, or is it like hate speech? Like, I just have no idea.
Is there like a Donald Trump's eBay for like Nazi plates and Redskins jerseys and stuff like that?
I have no idea, but I'm looking at it, I'm like, what am I going to do with this? Like, I don't even know what my options are. So anyway, if we do have
that, got a little extreme there. I didn't mean to take it in like three different extreme directions.
That's all good. If any of our 18 yeah. listeners want some, you know, gear that is of questionable taste, well, let me know. You know, to tweet at the pod, and Jamie will get in touch with me.
So I was disappointed by yesterday, though. This is probably the last thing I have to say, is like, I thought that the game and like the stadium, it was going to be like a celebration and a venue for just sell the team. Like the chants would be so loud. You'd hear them on TV the whole game. Every time they showed the crowd, you'd see like anti-Snyder stuff, but it didn't seem to go down that way, in part because half the stadium was filled with Vikings fans, you know, related observation there. Half the stadium was Vikings fans. They don't give a shit about Snyder. Correct. And then the other half of the stadium was probably like genuinely happy that like their 500 team with the plucky quarterback was like beating a good team, you know, like not really the environment or the vibe for, you know, sell the team chants. And actually I could hear the Heineke chants on multiple occasions on the broadcast. My brother Ryan was there. He was like, that was a great environment, great atmosphere. So I don't know. It just wasn't quite, I thought this was going to be like the, we're all going to dunk on Dan Snyder's head game.
I think everybody shares your sort of skepticism. I think nobody wants to believe it. I think that there's a significant group of fans that do feel like the chants, the booing of Tanya Snyder contributed directly to this progress, and you know, didn't want to accidentally do anything wrong that might undo that. I honestly believe that. I have no evidence for this, but that's what I think. I think people were like, you just don't. It's like that commercial that they keep showing during the games where the kid falls asleep in the back of the car, and you know, the other kid's about to say, "Hey, she's asleep," and the mom's like, "Shh, like don't mention it." Like that's what it is. Like nobody wants to remind Dan that he has apparently possibly agreed to sell this team, so they just shh.
Good point.
That's what I think. That's what I got.
I'm trying to think if I have anything else.
It seems like there should be other stuff.
I do truly love the Heineke experience, by the way. Just the touchdown of Samuel yesterday, just straight up, like, not a 50-50 ball. It was more like a 25-75 ball because he threw it in a triple coverage. The broadcast guy was like, on the replay, said, Heineke throws it into a Vikings team meeting.
Yeah, and it was accurate. I mean, that highlight was so thrilling and fun to watch that, like, yes, I totally agree. And Heineke is fun to watch. I don't know, man. Like, I feel like we're at the same point. I feel like it's, you know, it's the first week in November. I'm like, ugh, we still have to watch this. I feel like this is what I do every year. And you know, here I am again.
This year oddly feels like 2020, the 7-9 year. In part, in this particular way. Heineke, you know.
Yeah, there's that.
he only really played the playoff game. Like, he
didn't
really.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good.
But,
okay,
but cool. You know, they're 4-5. And they're just on the outside of the playoffs looking in. If they went 5-4, I think they would have been one of only six NFC teams with winning records. And the first five, it's like, I guess the Eagles and the Cowboys are the best teams. Like, those are the teams that would have the best Super Bowl odds. And then it's like Vikings, Giants. There's maybe one other team with a winning record, but it's not like a contender type of team. The NFC is just like wide open, and you could like, I don't know, you can like squeak into the playoffs at like 8-9, maybe 9-8, and not have, you know, a great shot of making a run, but like, it's open. I don't know. It just reminds me of that year.
I don't disagree, but they'd be fourth in their, I mean, for Washington to go, it certainly seems like the NFC East would have to send four teams to the playoffs. And that just does not.
They would have to. Yeah. Everybody's 500 or lower. Like you look at the NFC conference picture. Like, Washington would have been, I think, the fifth seed, maybe the sixth seed, but with a 5-4 record right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems hard for me to imagine.
Well, this is part of why I was getting excited about the game yesterday, and why I was kind of into it was like, they were right there. 5-4 was right there for the taking. You know, 4-game win streak, 5-4. And not that, like, I care that deeply about the playoffs. Like, it's, you know, whatever. Just being in contention in December is like our Super Bowl. but, you know, I could not have seen there from, you know, like a few weeks back when they were 1-4. So it was exciting. They lost to the Vikings, kind of blew the shot. Now they got Philly on Monday night. Pretty sure that's not going to go well. And yeah, maybe we'll reconvene after the Houston game down the road. I don't know.
I'm all wrong footed. Cause I thought we had sworn that win, lose or anything, we weren't going to do this pod. So I'm just completely baffled, as to what we're doing and when we might talk again tomorrow at this rate.
We could, I don't know. What would be the news? That would necessitate.
All right, here's the thing. Is there any news in the, you know, in the Snyder sale, et cetera, that would be epic enough to merit a second straight day of potting?
I mean, it would actually have to happen.
Well, clearly, they are not going to manage to turn around a $1 billion sale in one day. But would the announcement of a formal offer, would that do it for you? Or... with Snyder coming out and saying, I have no interest in minority owners. I want to get out of here. You all have made me miserable. You've ruined my life and I hate you. Would that, like, what would it take, you know, to be worthwhile for you?
Money. I'd have to get a piece. I'm not going to answer your question. I just remembered I have one more thing.
Okay. Hit me.
RIP Dave Butts.
Yes.
I love Dave Butts.
I did too. Also, if we're doing them, we should also mention it's really sad news about Coy Gibbs. That was like, you know, that was just really sad. It seems like I don't know. It's just, we're that age, I guess, where lots of people, we grew up, obviously we didn't grow up idolizing Coy Gibbs. He's like our peer, but just, you know, it's one of those We're at that age. It sucks. It all sucks. What's your Dave Butts memory?
Meeting Dave Butts at the opening of a bank in Vienna, Virginia. He was doing like an autograph signing. I don't really remember the details other than I was like 10. And they had these little plastic footballs that they were giving out. I have a signed Dave Butts plastic football as well as a signed Dave Butts 1987 Tops football card. Great set, 87 Tops. But he had on the table, like on the signing table, his helmet, like his famously scarred up helmet. And in person, like it was such a relic. First of all, it was like enormous. I don't know if it was like larger than a normal football helmet, but he was larger than a normal football player, so it would make sense. And it was just like so scarred. Like it looked like it had just been through war, you know? So that was awesome to like get to meet him. And I always felt like he was kind of like a, you know, like a superhero, kind of like a mythological creature. But later in 2020, right before COVID, Breaking Tea did a Super Bowl party in Miami. We had the Breaking Tea Super Bowl party. It was hosted by Gardner Minshew. And guess who Gardner Minshew's agent was? Dave Butts' son.
Oh, that's crazy.
So I got to hang out at the Breaking Tea Super Bowl party with Dave Butts' son, who was such a good dude and had a great time talking to him. And I kind of like got to share, convey like how much I appreciated his dad, you know? And he really appreciated that and like shared just so much about like how great his dad's time in DC was and like just a special connection to the fan base. And like, he'll still get mail from fans. And I don't know, just made me like, you know, made the heart grow fonder for Dave Butts.
Yeah. I don't know that I ever met Dave Butts when I was a kid, but I met, saw Jeff Bostic at a similar meet and greet. And I was, you know, real small and he seemed like the biggest person on earth. So whenever they would talk about
how he was like the smallest, he was like a 250-pound center.
Yeah. So when they would talk about how big Dave Butts was, I would just picture what Jeff Bostic looked like to me and then like double him. So in my head, he was just like a monster. So yeah,
it was like him and Joe Jacoby were like the giants, like the true giants.
It was sad news. Did you hear what specifically what happened? I didn't either.
No, I don't know.
That's sad.
Yeah. All right. Well, his memory goes on. Indeed. Maybe we'll come together sometime soon. Maybe not. But
yeah, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good week, buddy.
Yeah, talk to you tomorrow. Bye.